Our next presentation is Integrating New and Old Technologies for Effective Weed Control in Cotton. Larry Steckel, University of Tennessee. Larry?
All right. Thank you, Tom. I'm going to get a shed of them glasses. I can't see the screen if I have them on, and I can't see y'all if I don't. So this is getting old as the pits. This title, Integrating New and Old Technologies for Effective Weed Control, quite frankly, I got a little bit confused because just about everything we're going to be using, what we have been using, and some of the new technologies coming online, if you said new and old, you'd say yes, because they're that. So 2,4-D and the Enlist trait, that came out in the 1940s, I believe. Dicamba came out in the 1950s. So not exactly new. It all depends on your perspective on how new they are. What's new is we can use them in some different ways, and hopefully that will be good going forward. And the first thing I wanted to think about, though, as far as new and what is kind of new and what we're going to have to think about in integrating some of these new technologies, particularly in Tennessee and in the Mid-South, is managing some newer glyphosate-resistant weed species. And I think Stanley kind of just earlier, Dr. Culpepper just mentioned, you know, some of his survey work that, you know, we're starting to do a pretty decent job on managing pigweed. Now, it's not coming cheap, and it's not coming easy, but we're doing a better job. But one thing particularly in Tennessee we're noting is a lot more issues with the glyphosate-resistant grass species and trying to manage them going forward. And in particular, goosegrass in Tennessee, but also we're starting to see a little bit more Italian ryegrass and some others. Goosegrass, really, in some places, I've gotten more calls on it this past year than I've had in a number of years on anything. And you got to realize what we're doing in Tennessee. Most of our cotton, you can spray glufosinate over the top of. You can spray Roundup over the top of. Last couple of years, that's the way we've gone. And what we do is we spray Liberty first, trying to get the pigweeds. I mean, it's all based around trying to control Palmer amaranth. Then we'll come back with Roundup and pick up any of the grasses that Liberty misses. Liberty's never been very stellar on goosegrass. So we're missing it, and once it became glyphosate resistant, we really lost out. So what are we doing? We're spraying another new old technology select. It's been out a long time cleaning these up, but it gets more expensive. And I had more calls this year on rescue type treatments on goosegrass where it's moved into some new counties. Actually, it's kind of moving south in Tennessee along on the Mississippi River. This is actually Tipton County, where this picture was taken, where people are going out and burning down with Roundup dicamba, and they're doing a pretty good job on things like mare's tail, but they're leaving the goosegrass. And here we're having to come back and clean them up with Select afterwards. Thank God Select still works, but how long is Select going to work? Also getting more calls, Tom, I don't know if maybe you are too, Johnson grass. We keep looking for it in Tennessee. I don't know how many times, we've been out, Dr. Wiggins in the back, been out pulling up rhizomes, we bring back to the greenhouse, we spray them, we kill them. But, boy, it seems like we're getting more calls on them, and I wonder if we aren't starting to see some of the glyphosate-resistant version creep across the river from Arkansas. Ryegrass, in particular, has been an issue. Particularly at burn down time, this is where we're using a lot of our Select, trying to take it out. It's not as big an issue in cotton and soybeans because you can go post as it is in corn. I had more calls on trying to control it in corn up front, and you got to be very careful. You're going to be spraying Select and then planting corn shortly afterwards. So you look at the new herbicide trait technology, and the one I'll really talk about is looks like it's going to be first out of the chute. Is the Roundup Extend Cotton, probably limited launch right now this year. Thinking probably going to be deregulated. Maybe not. Dicamba will have a label in hand. I think we'll see. I think it's a work in progress. But definitely it'll be tolerant to glyphosate and to glufosinate or Libri. And that's good. We need some new modes of action because if you look at Palmer pigweed, which is the one we're all battling, it's got a long history of developing resistance to a lot of herbicides. In the Mid-South, where Tom and I reside, Treflan, not very effective on it in a number of our populations, and you never know what you're going to get with it. Sometimes it's decent, but a lot of times at best it's 50-60% control. The ALS inhibitors haven't worked on it in some time. Of course, Roundup, This one scares me from a rotation aspect. We've had a lot more corn grown in Tennessee lately. It's been a good rotation crop, been some atrazine in there, but I really worry that we're going to lose traction with atrazine on Palmer pigweed. And then what do we do? So anything we can get, any of these new technologies coming online, be it a new herbicide or maybe doing something culturally, we've got to embrace and get used together in order to get best control. And Dr. Culpepper mentioned this, and it's one of my biggest worries as well. He and I like to fret a lot. But Liberty and the PPOs, really worry about, we're putting a lot of pressure on Liberty right now, particularly in cotton. But even the PPOs, my God, Tom, in soybean particularly, but in cotton as well, we're putting a lot of pressure on them. So, you know, how long are they going to last if all we're going to do is rely on them? And this is what we get. I have a lot of growers that still, you know, Delta and Pineland cotton's been very, very popular in my state for years and years. It seems like, where's Mr. Jimmy? Mr. Jimmy, it seems like a lot of your colleagues in Tennessee like to go all whole hog with one cotton variety. We'll go 80%. It was first, what, Paymaster, and then it was 09-12, and it was 444. And that's what they'd like to plant. Well, we started getting into issues with our pigweed population being way too high, just spraying Roundup. Really drove us into a Liberty-based system. And this is kind of where we've shook out now. Roughly 70% of our acres get Liberty over the top in some form or fashion. Some of it's wide strike, some of it's phytogen Liberty Link. Even with the new technologies, and Dr. Culpepper mentioned this earlier, Liberty is going to be a big, important part of it, and can be and should be. We're going to have to get it into the mix to get consistent control, and there's your kind of window of application. You can use it in Xtend cotton. You're going to be able to use it in Enlist cotton as well. The thing with Liberty, and we've mentioned this before, and this is, again, trying to get control with it in an integrated approach, is getting inconsistent Liberty performance. There's a lot of times it is money on pigweed. Absolutely terrific if you're on it on small sizes, and, you know, get good coverage. But I, you know, I've gotten calls, my colleagues have gotten calls over the years, like in this particular field where the farmer did everything I would ask them to do. They sprayed with flat fan nozzles, 20 gallons per acre, 2-inch Palmer pigweed, should have smoked it, and then they had a lot of these patches where they weren't getting good control. And that's where we started finding out a lot of this night application and night spraying, anywhere near when the sun's going down, you're just not going to get good control with it. And that's something you really need to think of, because a quart of Roundup or Liberty is going to run you, what, $18, something like that. Pretty expensive if it doesn't work. So you got to try and time it when you're spraying it middle of the day. So tips for using Liberty in any of these systems, in any of these technologies on pigweeds 4 inches or less, inconsistent control with when you start getting above that 4-inch range. Sometimes it'll control it, sometimes it won't, and I can't tell you why. It depends a lot of times on the environment, the humidity you have, you know, how much cloud cover you had that day. There's a lot of things that go into it. Coverage is essential, at least 15 gallons per acre. And probably from the research we've done, Dr. Culpepper, and we've done it in Mississippi, you know, kind of that 2 hours after the sun comes up to 2 hours before it goes down is where you need to be. Easy for me to talk about a lot of these things. It's a little harder when you start writing some checks. If you start looking at just the herbicide cost increase, what we're seeing from 2006 to when, you know, Roundup was still fairly effective on a lot of our pigweed to where we are today, herbicide costs have gone up a lot. And I gave a talk at the Cotton and Rice Conference this last year with a farmer from Tennessee, and he gave the most effective talk I've ever seen any farmer give. He just put his Excel spreadsheet up there on there, and he had his 2006 costs and his 2012 costs at the time, and it was pretty glaring, the increases. But if you look at cotton, we're gone basically doubled, about $120, and that's just the herbicide cost. And I know we had discussions on economics here before. Soybeans aren't, in fact, in my neck of the woods, they're worse. We're doing a better job controlling pigweed and soybeans, but boy, it isn't coming cheap or it isn't coming easy. And I think all our fear was when these commodity prices started to come back down, the what we kind of more think of as reality than what they've been the last 3 or 4 years, makes it tough. And corn's not been out of the mix either. You start getting high pigweed populations in your soybeans and your cotton, you rotate to corn, you're going to have to manage it in corn. And you're seeing increased costs there as well. So everybody's spraying more herbicides is what they're doing. If you look at where my growers are now to where they were in 2006, their average herbicide cost across all their crops has gone up anywhere from 200 to 250%. Now, you take that farmer I mentioned, when he gave his talk, he said from 2006 to 2013, I think it was, his fertilizer costs went up 48%. His seed costs went up 50%. And its herbicide costs went up 250%. And sustainability is a huge concern. And it's something we're all trying to work on from a bunch of different angles. And one of the things is cover crops. We're seeing more and more interest, particularly in Tennessee, in cover crops. We did a survey this past year, and it was well over 50% of the growers in Tennessee are at least experimenting with cover crops. Some are using it on some significant acres. It's not all the same species. They're using different species. They're mixing and matching. They're trying to search for a way to use cover crops and effectively help supplement some of this control. Now, how these work somewhat depends on the area you're at. Now, Dr. Culpepper gave me some of these talks, and look at the ryegrass he's got there. Now, South Georgia, compared to Tennessee, has no winter. It never checks up growing. We don't get biomass like that. If we did, my God, it'd be absolutely tremendous. We have winter in Tennessee more often than not, and we just don't get that consistent of growth. So we're trying to look at ways to try and get better growth in the northern cotton belt. So winter cover crops, as far as management, varies by your region. If you're where I am, it just depends on the year, and it also depends on when you get those cover crops planted. Earlier is better, and boy, that's a lot easier said than done. We had a lot of growers over the past 2 years that flew cover crops onto their standing crops. I had a lot of calls this year, I'm going to defoliate with Def Prep or whatever, and want to know how that's going to affect the cover crop just coming up. A lot of these questions I hadn't thought about before, but again, it's good integrated pest management on you know, trying to get an early start on your cover crop. Because there's no substitute for getting it started and getting it going, particularly where we are in the northern cotton belt where, you know, some years we can get growth like you can in South Georgia, and other years I'm lucky to get it ankle knee high, even rye cover. We're even going to start messing with even maybe putting just a shade of nitrogen on it in the fall to get it going. So potential benefits for cotton growers really across the area. This is Dr. Culpepper's slide, but, you know, improved pomer control. I think that's something we're seeing both north and south in the cotton belt. It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not 100%, but in an integrated program with herbicides, it is indeed helping. Reduce herbicide inputs. I'll talk about that in a minute. It is going to protect the chemistry. It's a herbicide mode of action that, you know, essentially that shading is a mode of action. So it's something to help cut the population down. And that's one way to reduce selecting for those rare individuals that are resistant to the herbicide you're using. Higher yields on dry land. I think particularly in areas where, you get a very dry summer, that cover can really help conserve some moisture. Can be less labor than trying to run a lot of tillage and chopping crews. And of course, the big thing from our part in Tennessee is mitigating wind and water erosion. In Tennessee, we just can't till. If we do, most of our fields end up down in New Orleans. So we've got to do something different. And this is one of the aspects we do have. And the NRCS has been doing some programs, at least helping fund some of the seed money. So possibly reduce some irrigation treatment. You know, if you're running a pivot across because you're conserving moisture. There's been a lot of work by the entomologists that it does help mitigate thrips injury, and we're seeing more problems with thrips, at least in Tennessee, where tobacco thrips seems to be resistant to some of these seed treatment insecticides. This is another big positive for it. And one of the big things, at least for my protection in Tennessee, and I'll mention it again, is it has helped a lot on the winter annual weeds that we're struggling to control, most notably horseweed. We did a lot better job controlling horseweed 5, 6, 7 years ago. Last couple of years, it's been more of a struggle. Dicamba doesn't seem to be quite as consistent, and I don't know. Some of it, I think it's just missing it, Tom. We had a really hard winter this past year. It killed off all the fall horseweed, and it all came up. All the mare's tail came up, gosh, in April, May, it seemed like. So it missed the burn down. Some instances, it doesn't seem like maybe dicamba is quite as effective as it once was. So if we can take that out of the picture, it can greatly help us. One of the things different by region, though, is what you can do in these covers. They use a lot of strip till what they're looking at in South Georgia is strip till, where they move the trash aside and they plant the cotton in there to get the good seed soil contact. This is some of the stuff Dr. Culpepper showed me, some of his research he's doing in this area. One thing we're trying in Tennessee just this past year is looking at strip burn down. And so instead of doing a strip tillage, we're going out early with just a 10-inch band and spraying strips in there with the auto steer John Deere tractor, and then coming back with the planter and running right back into those rows. It worked surprisingly well this past year. We got our best stands we've ever gotten. Prior to that, we just tried to plant right into it, and we struggled getting seed-soil contact. So this is something, especially with the new technology all these farmers are going with now, the auto steer, that they might be able to use. Go out with an early burn down in these strips, and then come back, and then they overspray the whole field when they typically do, a couple weeks before planting, after they've gotten some pretty good growth. That's what it kind of looks like in rye. Where you try and plant down in those rows where you kind of beat the rye down early. Of course, you don't have quite as good coverage in there from a biomass standpoint. You're going to see a few weeds come up in there, but again, you've got to integrate this with a herbicide to make it work. And as this picture shows, and I think Stanley took this picture, you get any light hit the ground, and you're going to see some pigweed come up, and this is where the herbicides come in. I don't think we can go totally organic here. We've got to get herbicides into the mix as well, but I think it's one way to keep them all, again, in an integrated approach, controlling this problem. Dr. Matt Wiggins at, I think, 2:15, isn't it, Matt? You're going to be giving a talk on his study on cover crops. This is some of the stuff he's doing, because in Tennessee, we're still trying to ascertain what we need to do. If we want a grass, or we want a legume grass mixture, we're still trying to get our hands around that. And I'm not sure which version of this talk I got on here, but I would highly encourage you to go down and see his talk. He had some pretty interesting things on there. And I want to get to kind of covering and kind of summing all this up. Really kind of integrating cover crops, both from what Matt's done, and what Garrett Montgomery, what he's starting to do on cover crops, and then what we've done over the last 5, 6, 7 years, we've done some things on Mr. Jimmy, we've done some things on John Lindemuth on some big field scales, some positives on integrating cover crops, which is an old technology, but it's kind of become new again in Tennessee, in with a lot of these herbicides. It can be a part of a herbicide resistance management program. Again, it's a herbicide mode of action, cuts the number of plants that you have, or Palmer pigweed or whatever resistant weed you have coming up. Less plants out there, less likelihood of finding those resistant individuals, so it can help on resistance management. Can greatly help on control of glyphosate-resistant horseweed, and at least from what we've seen, I think what Dr. Culpepper's seen, suppressed Palmer pigweed. It's not a silver bullet, but it does help quite a bit. The thing that's really a big problem is timing is in the fall is so critical, especially for us in the northern part of the cotton belt. The earlier you can do it, the better. And then we start talking about wheat, and I think cereal rye, well, I think you're an entomologist. I don't know what the fly free date is, but I don't even know if it gets into rye. But you got some issues on Hessian fly if we go with wheat or rye too early. So there's some things I didn't think about going into this that we got to think about. But the earlier you can do it, the better. At least in Tennessee, it looks like mixing a legume with a grass is the better way to go. I think you just get better growth, get better tonnage, in an area where we got a shorter, or longer winter, shorter good growth for a lot of our fall crops. The other thing that worries me, especially coming up out of Mississippi, is the glyphosate-resistant ryegrass. It's a huge issue down there. It's just starting to cross the imaginary line now into Tennessee. I worry about that thing becoming an issue, and I don't want these winter cover crops becoming a nurse crop for glyphosate-resistant ryegrass. So that's something we're also looking at. Garrett Montgomery, my graduate student, he's looking at this right now of actually putting some herbicides on these cover crops in the fall, just specifically designed to keep glyphosate-resistant ryegrass from getting established in these fields. So, and the other thing, if you start looking at some of these new technologies and some of the other research we're going to be kind of doing as a region, but looking at especially with, the Roundup Extend, maybe the 2,4-D Enlist technologies going forward, is with those technologies, we might be able to use cover crops differently than we have in the past. Instead of burning them down 2 weeks before planting, maybe we can do it right closer to planting. You're a lot more likely to get things like vetch killed with dicamba than you are with Roundup. So we're going to start looking at some things like that going forward to see if we can't get more traction out of these cover crops to make them more consistent, cut down the number of actual herbicide applications we have to make, and maybe make cotton a little more sustainable going forward. So with that, Tom, questions, comments, we can drag Dr. Culpepper back up here. He's hiding down there. Mr. Jimmy asked about Roundup and Liberty on the front end, mixing the two together. I like it. I've had a lot better control, even with Palmer pigweed that's glyphosate resistant, mixing the two together than I have just putting Liberty out by itself. I think some of it is we still got some susceptibles out there that are to Roundup, and you cull them out, so you get the population down a little more. But I think just the surfactant load too from the two might also help. But it does seem synergistic. Is that what you've seen mixing them, Tom?
About 10 or 15%.
Yeah, that's about what I've found. About 10 to 15%. Yeah. So.
Any other questions or discussion? For any of us? I guess we're done. Okay, well, we appreciate your attendance in the weed science session here. Larry mentioned it, but I would like to remind you at 11 o'clock, we have presentations in Salon J, I believe it is, on new technologies, more on new technologies and cover crops and other issues with weed control in cotton. So thank you. Bill, I guess I'll turn it over to you.